Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO of the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming a spinal problem through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you're not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. In today's episode, I'm delighted to be joined by 22-year-old Kate Conklin from McLean, Virginia, whose spinal journey is one of resilience, transformation, and newfound purpose. As a lifelong athlete, Kate never imagined that one moment would change everything. At just 20 years old, a disc herniation left her completely immobile, unable to sit, stand, or even walk. What followed was months of pain and uncertainty. However, through expert care, she not only regained her mobility, but also discovered her true calling in patient care. Her journey took an unexpected turn when she re-herniated a disc a year and a half later, forcing her to confront her biggest fear head on. But this time, she faced it with the knowledge, experience, and support of the very team that once helped her heal. Now, she's back to being a girl on the go as she attends fitness classes 5 times a week with ease. As a medical assistant and an aspiring physician assistant, she uses her story to empower and connect with patients going through similar struggles. Now you know what to expect. Let's get back to it and dive into Kate's story. Kate's spinal journey began about 2 years ago when she was 20 years old. Kate, tell us about your experience.
So I have been a competitive swimmer and ballet dancer my whole life. From ages 10 to 14, I would have swim practice multiple times a week, usually before and after school, 2 days a week, and then 4 hours on Saturday mornings. These practices also included an hour of dry land, which is essentially weight training. On the days I only had one swim practice, I also had ballet, usually for another 3 to 4 hours. In high school, I stopped swimming so much and just did high school swim, which was an hour after school, 4 days a week during the season. I started dancing a lot more, about 4 hours every weekday and 6 hours on Saturdays, more before Nutcracker season or competitions. I kept competing and training throughout my freshman year of college, and I took dance classes 2 times a week and performed with the dance majors at UT. Around the beginning of January 2023, I began experiencing episodes of mild pain and muscle spasms in my low back. I didn't think anything of this at the time. It would go away after 3 days with some Advil or Tylenol and heat.
In April 2023, Kate was in her junior year at the University of Texas at Austin. To take a break from studying for her final exams, she decided to attend a Pilates class, an activity she regularly enjoyed.
The class went on like any other class I had taken. I was getting dressed afterwards when suddenly my back seized and I fell to the ground. I'd never felt pain like this before in my life. I rushed to urgent care, and I was given an injection of Toradol, a type of NSAID, into my left glute, and I took home some muscle relaxers. This didn't do anything for my pain.
Kate was completely immobile. She was unable to sit, walk, stand, or even use the restroom.
As a lifelong athlete and an avid Pilates and core power yoga attendee, this was absolutely devastating. I was in so much pain that I couldn't sleep. 3 or 4 days after the incident, I saw an orthopedist in Texas who said I had herniated a lumbar disc and wanted to confirm this with an MRI.
The MRI showed that Kate had in fact herniated her lateral left-sided disc in between the L5 and S1 vertebrae.
The doctor wanted to give me an L5-S1 transforaminal epidural steroid injection. This is when the doctor injects steroids into the epidural space, which is where the disc herniation had pushed out and was causing irritation on the nerve root. Putting steroids in the area minimizes inflammation and relieves pain caused by the herniation. During the injection, something went wrong. I believe the doctor hit a nerve root when injecting me because I suddenly felt severe shooting pain like I'd been hit by a lightning bolt. Then I started to have complete numbness in my left calf and foot. I developed a foot drop. My left leg was much weaker than the right leg, and I couldn't really lift my left foot to walk. I felt numb for about 5 to 6 hours, and then I was hit with excruciating 10 out of 10 pain. I even developed bladder incontinence.
After this new development, Kate was rushed to the emergency room where she was given pain medications and had a CT scan done.
This CT scan confirmed my disc herniation. It showed bone spurs at the L4-5 levels, which means that there were also abnormal bone formations at the end of my vertebrae, causing more narrowing and resulting in pain and irritation around the nerve roots. What was shocking was that the CT scan had also revealed that I had a 6th lumbar vertebra, something that neither the initial MRI nor the orthopedist had seen. I've learned that about 20% of people have a 6th lumbar vertebra, and most of the time it does not cause any pain or problems. However, it can make you predisposed to have more instability at that level, and therefore more likely to get a herniated disc from a normal movement, such as putting on pants.
With this revelation, Kate hurried to see a neurosurgeon in Texas who suggested a multi-level fusion to remove the herniation because of her extra vertebrae.
As a 20-year-old, the idea of a fusion really scared me. I wanted to do everything possible to avoid a fusion. When bringing these concerns to my surgeon in Texas, he advised there was one practice that he knew of that could do minimally invasive surgery, BSI in Reston, Virginia. This was great news because this practice was so close to home.
Kate met with Dr. Chris Good at VSI immediately. He accurately diagnosed her 6th lumbar vertebrae and recommended an L6-S1 microdiscectomy and hemilaminectomy. A microdiscectomy is a minimally invasive surgery that can remove herniated disc material. A hemilaminectomy is another type of minimally invasive surgery that involves removing a part of the vertebrae to relieve pressure on spinal nerves. In the meantime, he sent Kate to VSI physical therapist Larry Grine for dry needling and exercises to help alleviate some of the pain. She had surgery 4 days later.
I was able to walk out of the hospital just hours after my surgery without any pain at all. This was the first time I had walked in almost 8 weeks. I then began rigorous physical therapy rehab with Larry Grine and Jason Arnett at VSI PT, who helped me regain my strength and mobility as fast as possible so I could return to Austin. I also started seeing a nutritionist to reduce inflammation and lose weight, which would relieve the stress on my back. With all of their help, I was able to return to my life in Austin within a month after surgery.
Excited about her recovery, this whole experience changed Kate's outlook on her future.
At that time, I was majoring in public health and planned to go to graduate school for my master's degree in public health. However, my experience with debilitating pain and extraordinary patient care changed my life. I decided I wanted to go to PA school, and I switched my classes around to graduate a semester early so I could immediately start gaining valuable hands-on patient care experience. The summer after graduation, I started as a medical assistant at a spine and pain management clinic.
This seemed like the happy end of Kate's spinal journey. However, things took a turn a couple of months ago, which was a year and a half after her surgery.
From May 2023 to August of 2024, I was pain-free. The sensation returned to my left calf and foot, but by only about 50%. I was still very happy with these results. This past August, I began to feel some muscular pain again in my low back. I began dry needling therapy at VSI again about 2 to 3 times a week from August to December. In December, I developed nerve pain again in my left leg. It was less severe than it was before, but it was definitely worrisome.
An updated MRI revealed that Kate had re-herniated her disc.
This is not uncommon, but it was heartbreaking for me. I was terrified this would mean another 8 weeks of unfathomable pain and immobility, something I honestly was not sure that I could handle twice in under 2 years at only 22 years old. BSI was, once again, an answer to prayer. Dr. Thomas Nguyen, a pain management specialist there, suggested another transforaminal epidural steroid injection into the L6-S1 level. I wanted nothing less than to have another injection after my terrible experience, but he made me feel comfortable, and the injection went perfectly, just like he assured me.
Kate was also started on some nerve medication. This, along with the injection, gave her 60% relief in her symptoms. A couple of weeks later, she received another injection with Dr. Nguyen, a left S1 transforaminal epidural steroid injection, which boosted her relief levels to 90%.
Thankfully, the injections were effective, and I'm currently not in any pain. I can stand and walk around patients all day long and go to core power yoga up to 5 times a week. I know that my spinal journey is likely far from over, an unfortunate reality that many patients face. However, my experience at VSI, my job as a medical assistant, and simply living through it twice have made that reality much less scary for me. Before my second herniation, I would tell people that my biggest fear was re-herniating. Now, I'm just grateful to know that this was, in fact, not the end of the world, and that there are answers and people who can help me. I also truly would not change my experience for the world. While, of course, it's not something anyone ever wants to go through, my journey gave me such respect and appreciation for my body and what it can do. It also opened my eyes to a career in patient care. I'm so grateful for the empathy and unique ability to relate to my patients that this experience gave me. And I'm also so excited to see what's coming next.
Wow, Kate, your story is so empowering. There are so many periods of uncertainty and fear during your journey. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the initial injury, how it affected you, your mental health as a dancer and a swimmer and being in college and that sort of that fear.
Yeah. I mean, it stops you in your tracks. It's a real eye-opening experience. I think it's really easy to take everything that you can do on a daily basis for granted. And then as an athlete, to go from being very active to immediately unable to move is really, it's hard to mentally wrap your mind around. And in my experience as a dancer and a swimmer, and I'm sure is common amongst all athletes, so much of my identity was wrapped up in who I was as that athlete. And to face an injury that left me not only unable to perform the sport that I loved, but to do anything at all, it really did force me to reevaluate who I was as an individual outside of who I was as a dancer and as a swimmer.
Yeah. I'm sitting here next to you talking with you, and I see this young, beautiful, gorgeous young girl who is vibrant and just smart and articulate and all the things. And it's absolutely so hard for me to imagine what you've been through. And I think that really is a testament to what we're talking to today, getting excellent care mm-hmm. and getting back to your life.
Yeah.
And, you're a young person, mm-hmm. you're stopped in your tracks.
Totally.
And I just couldn't believe when I read your story that for 8 weeks you couldn't walk.
It was awful.
How did you get around?
I didn't. I mean, my roommates were wonderful and truly, I mean, talk about friendships is I lived with 6 women at the time and I lived on the 14th story of a 30 story building in Austin.
Wow.
So I didn't go anywhere.
Wow.
And they were wonderful. If I needed food, they brought it to me.
Yeah.
If I needed to go anywhere, I mean, to go get my MRI, I couldn't sit. So I had to lay sideways across the back seat of a car. My roommate skipped her final to drive me to my MRI.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, they were just so, they showed up. And I think that, you know, Kate, situations like this are when you really see the people around you and they show up. And and they did. And my family flew in to Texas to come help me. Mm-hmm. It was really hard, especially, you know, being 20 years old. Yeah. Nobody knows how to handle this or what to do.
Right.
But I couldn't have done it by myself.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you're in college, you're going along, you're doing your thing. And then you have this pain and you almost can't describe it.
Not at all.
And it's like, I'm not making it up.
I know.
Did you have moments like that where you felt like people thought maybe you were making it up?
A lot. There were a lot. And there were a lot when I would say, you know, at this point I was armed with Dr. Google because, you know, I'm 20 and alone.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I have a herniated disc. And people were like, no, you have piriformis syndrome or no, you're okay. And it was just muscular. And I was like, I don't know how to explain this because I've never felt something like this before, but there's something really wrong.
Yeah.
And to find the words to describe that too is really hard. And that's something I see with my patients too, is they try to explain nerve pain.
Yeah.
And they come at a loss for words. And I can just say, I understand.
Yeah. One of the things that you said in your story here is that you felt like you'd been struck by a lightning bolt.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that is a really good description.
Yeah.
Myself having had nerve pain, a herniated disc, and you just can't describe it.
Nope.
It's like, I can't take it.
No.
Like, I can't tolerate it.
No, it is really like teeth gritting, nails on a chalkboard type.
There's pain. Nothing like nerve pain. I mean, nope. Body pain, you can kind of, you know, muscle through that or mm-hmm. muster through that. But nerve pain, if you've never had it, it's indescribable.
It is. And it's something you can't distract yourself from either, I've found.
That's the thing. Yeah, it doesn't go away. It's a constant, you know, burning,
yeah,
painful.
Not fun.
Not fun. Not fun.
Not at all. No, not fun ever, but especially not fun when, you know.
So let's talk about finding the right care for you. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things we talk about a lot here in the foundation is, you know, you have a condition, you know, something is wrong.
Right.
It's not going away. You know, you're taking NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like, you know, Motrin or Advil, those kinds of medications. Mm-hmm. It's not touching it. No. So you know something different. I need something different.
Yeah.
So you were in Texas at school mm-hmm. and you went first to see an orthopedist?
Yes, correct. Just a general orthopedist. Yes.
And the orthopedist said to you, I think you've got a back problem.
Yes. And I mean, that was pretty obvious considering I was laying sideways on the bed.
Yeah.
And she was like, I think you have a herniated disc. And she took x-rays, but as you know, you can't see disc material on x-rays. You can only see bone. So she didn't recognize at that point that I had an extra lumbar vertebrae, but she did say, I do think you have a herniated disc and I think you should get an MRI. Especially because my pain hadn't responded to the anti-inflammatory injection I'd had or the muscle relaxers, which would have maybe been indicative of it being muscular in nature.
Right.
So that's what she had told me at first. Yeah. And so then I went to go get the MRI and it confirmed that I did have a herniated disc.
And was she following you in the follow-up on the MRI?
Yes.
Okay. And then at that point, mm-hmm. did she recommend?
She did. She recommended and performed the injection.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I went in, my mom brought me in and I did like the nasal type of sedation.
Okay.
And I remember I was obviously very groggy when I was on the bed getting the injection and I was very scared and in a lot of pain. And I was just so hopeful that this would work.
Yeah.
And again, at that point too, I was like, no surgery, no surgery, no surgery. I didn't even think that that was an option.
Right.
I didn't think that that was the type of injury I had at all. And I just remember this most severe shooting pain down my leg. And I remember looking back at her and asking, was it supposed to feel like that? And she said, yeah, that's fine. And then I couldn't stand up from the table.
Wow.
And then they made me stay a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And then they called and checked in. And I later learned that they don't usually do that.
Oh, gosh.
And then I had to go to the ER that night and call the doctor on call. And they moved around patients so I could be seen first thing the next morning with the neurosurgeon.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. That is so harrowing to think about. I'm just imagining you being there. You know, thank goodness, you know, your mom was able to be with you. But you're in pain.
Yeah.
And you're afraid
mm-hmm.
and you're going through this. And that's a reminder, right? As a provider, just to know the state of mind that patients are in. It's, mm-hmm. it's one of the most vulnerable times in life.
If not the most vulnerable to be the combination of afraid, in pain, not really getting any sleep and you don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other thing too, that's really easy as a provider is because you do know, you don't realize. I mean, I had no idea. I didn't know anything about my spine. I didn't know anything about herniated discs. And now I'm so grateful that I do, but I didn't.
Right.
And that's another thing that adds to the uncertainty and the fear is just it's blind trust and not having control and not being knowledgeable is
right.
It just adds to all of it.
To the anxiety.
Exactly.
And that's something, again, we talk about so much here is that, you know, if you can arm yourself with some knowledge, even understanding the anatomy, like words like epidural, what does that even mean?
Right.
Foramina, where is that? So, you know, I think spine is so confusing to so many people. The language is difficult.
It is.
The anatomy is challenging.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot to learn about and disc herniation. It's a confusing topic.
It is.
It's like, what? It can resolve on its own. Sometimes it can.
How come mine isn't? Mm-hmm. And then she was like, we're going to do an epidural injection. And my first thought is, I'm not pregnant. Because that's the only context I've heard of it. Yeah. And come to know that's the space that it is. That's not the type of injection. But you don't know that.
Right.
There were lots of those things along the line that I just learned through my experience.
Yeah.
But gosh, even the second time around, I had so much less anxiety just being armed with the knowledge that I had.
Yeah. Well, so let's go back to that ER. The neurosurgeon makes time to see you the next morning. Mm-hmm. And were you in a wheelchair or were you using crutches or how were you?
So it was pretty awful. I couldn't sit, but I couldn't stand because I was in so much pain. So they tried to give me a wheelchair at the ER, but I couldn't. And this is actually funny. They didn't have any beds and it was the level one trauma center in Austin on UT's campus. And it was a 6-hour wait.
Oh my gosh.
So my mom said, can you have any open beds for her? Because they tried to put me in a wheelchair, but I was kind of on one side in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
They said, no, full. So I was laying sideways on the linoleum floor of the emergency waiting room.
Goodness.
And my roommate had just gone to go park the car. My mom was like, we can't do this for another 6 hours. I mean, I was throwing up and couldn't feel my leg at all.
Oh my gosh.
And so my roommate came back around, took me to a second ER. They couldn't see me.
What?
We ended up going to 3 emergency rooms.
Oh my goodness.
And it was 2:30 in the morning before they could triage me.
Oh my gosh.
And at that point, I was just zoned out.
Yeah, wow.
Like, you just kind of shut down and grit and bear through it at that point.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it wasn't just one emergency.
I can't even believe that. Oh my gosh. So you get to the third ER, and did you see a neurosurgeon that night?
The doctor on call that night, they immediately brought me back. Thankfully, they just put me straight into a bed from the car. So I really just was able, laying on my side was the only time that I was not in 10 out of 10 throwing up pain.
Yeah.
So they immediately got me into a bed from the car onto a stretcher. So that I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
And that's when they did the CT scan and I saw the doctor at the ER that night.
I see.
And then they just gave me enough medication really to knock me out.
Yeah. Get some sleep.
Exactly. And then first thing in the morning, my mom took me to see the neurosurgeon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you get to the neurosurgeon. He looks at the CT scan.
Yep.
And he says what?
He says, human anatomy says that you have 5 lumbar vertebrae. But you have 6. And
is that the first time you were told that?
First time I was ever told that. And that was my first question was, how come nobody's ever told me this?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you've never had an x-ray of your back, have you? And I said, well, I did 2 weeks ago. And he was like, yeah, I guess they didn't see it. So that was at first. And then I, you know, all the questions of what does that mean? And I guess it doesn't really mean anything on its own. But it, as I said, can make you a little bit more susceptible to having herniated discs due to the instability. But what this surgeon had said was because of the extra vertebrae and where the herniation is, your pelvis is in the way. So I can't perform this minimally invasive surgery called a microdiscectomy because of your anatomy. So I would have to do a fusion and I'd have to fuse probably from your L3, your third lumbar vertebrae, to your SI joint, your sacrum.
Mm-hmm.
And he was walking through all of the restrictions to mobility and just also having hardware and immediately jumping to a fusion. I was like, there has to be another option. And how come you can't perform this minimally invasive surgery? And he said, I can't, but I do know somebody who can. And I said, well, then can I please go there?
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was wonderful.
And what was it about a fusion that scared you? And how had you read about?
Right.
And he was talking about 3 levels.
3 levels.
Yeah.
It was, and I'm still kind of getting over that fear. I think anything unknown is scary. I think any big surgery is scary. I'd never had surgery before.
Yeah.
But for me, I would say my biggest concern was just the loss of mobility so young.
Yeah.
And the possible implications on the higher up levels in my back too. And I didn't want to cause any more stress there.
Yeah.
And I'm a dancer. I mean, I like to put my leg up behind my head.
Right.
I mean, even now I do yoga. I just like to be mobile and flexible. And that's part of, like I said, my identity too. And
right.
To lose that so quickly without trying for other options didn't feel like being true to myself or fighting for myself in the way that I wanted to.
Okay. So he says, I can't do this, but I've got a friend halfway across the country, which is in your hometown.
I know, which was just
how
so
lucky
crazy.
Was that?
Yeah.
So, how long did it take for you to go get to Virginia to get that consult?
so grateful that we had a family friend who had previously seen Dr. Good. And he said, he's phenomenal. And looked him up. And my dad called. And they were able to get me in the next week. So then the next question was, how do we get me
home? Yeah.
And we were thinking about renting a car and driving back from Texas, which is a 26-hour drive.
Oh my goodness.
With me laying sideways across the back, but that was not the best plan. So what we ended up doing was just getting me enough pain medication to get on a plane and getting a seat that I could lean fully back in. And my stepmom really kind of just like guided me through the airport and through the plane to get home. And it was not a fun plane ride. I will definitely tell you that. And I was praying for no turbulence.
Oh my gosh. That's right.
But I got back and then I was able to see Dr. Good within 3 days of getting back home.
Yeah. So that's an amazing experience because, you know, we tell people a lot of the time, get second opinions on things. Get second opinions. No good practitioner, no good surgeon is ever going to be upset about that.
No.
And a lot of times people feel like, well, I don't want to hurt their feeling. Right. And that's embarrassing. It's like, no, it's not. No. It's your body.
It is. And it's an empowering thing to stand up for yourself and to say, well, this is my story. And any good provider is going to recognize that and encourage that.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful that that's what this surgeon did. He said, I see that and I don't want to do this fusion on you.
Yeah.
He said, you don't have to have this fusion, but I can't. So go elsewhere. And I was just so grateful that he gave opened that door for me.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah.
What a gift that is.
Really.
That's just awesome.
Really.
It's really awesome.
Yeah.
So you get to Virginia, you see Dr. Good. Mm-hmm. He says, we can take care of this. Totally. We've got another option for you.
Yep.
And you and your parents are like, let's do it.
Immediately, yes.
So you got that done and had immediate relief from the minimally invasive.
I walked out of the hospital and I took one Advil that night before I went to bed. And I know that's not everybody's story, but that was mine. And
that's the miracle of modern spinal technology.
And I remember telling my parents the next morning, they were like, you don't have any post-op pain? And I said, oh, of course I do. They cut into my back. But nothing compares to nerve pain. And so
I'll take a little scab or something. Exactly. Yeah, that's nothing.
I was like, this is great.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
So happy going on with your life. Mm-hmm. And this is through this journey. You go back to college. Yes. You change your career plan.
I called my advisor and I said, I'm graduating this semester now. And she said, really? And I said, yep. Change it around.
That's amazing.
I got that.
And now you're armed with knowing about your spine.
Yeah.
And the importance of spine health and the importance of alignment and anatomy and caring for your spine and, you know, and all of that activity that you did in your life as an athlete, the yoga and Pilates, all of that stuff was actually really helping your spine.
It was.
You know?
It really was.
And you didn't even really know that.
I had no idea.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it really brought a new mindfulness with me.
Yeah.
To my exercise.
To your awareness.
Yeah,
to your whole life.
Absolutely.
You're really lucky that you've discovered this at a young age.
Yes.
Sorry that you had to go through this to discover that, but this is going to stay with you for the rest of your life.
Oh yeah.
So you're going along. Mm-hmm. Everything's great. You're back in Pilates class and all of a sudden you get the pain again.
Yeah. And it was different this time. I just felt muscular pain in my low back. It felt very tight. And I went back to the physical therapist that I had seen immediately right before and after my surgery. And they did some dry needling, which really helped. And so that was very reaffirming to me of, oh, phew.
It's just muscle strain.
Exactly. Yeah. And it kept getting worse and more common, but I kept exercising because I knew that
that could be helpful.
It could be helpful.
Yeah.
And I started to get some pain down my leg again. And unlike the first time, it came on gradually. There was no obvious inciting event that I could say, yes, this is when it happened. It happened over a couple of weeks up until right before Christmas. And it gradually went from, oh, I'm having some leg pain again, to couldn't lay on my back.
Oh my gosh.
Couldn't sit for very long. Couldn't stand for very long. Had to have the seat warmer on in the car driving to and from work just to get through the car ride. And I was like, okay, I think something's wrong again.
Yeah. early recognition of that, do you think was helpful this time? Like knowing that, you know, I'm going to watch full waiting, see what's happening here, but no, this is wrong. Something's wrong.
I do. And if not just for the treatment, but for the emotional, mental aspect of it, is there's so much of this, all of it is out of my control.
Yeah.
That's really hard. And so just to know, to be armed with my past experience, with my newfound knowledge, to know that there is always going to be a care team that is there to take care of me and people, all of that made it a little bit easier this time.
Yeah.
And so the catching it easier and knowing what to look for.
Right.
When I did start to have the nerve pain, I was, it made it easier for me to grapple with, okay, something's wrong, but so now what?
Yeah.
Instead of immediately, oh no.
So you called Dr. Good's office back and said,
I think I'm re-herniated my disc. And they were like, oh dear. Okay. And it's not uncommon.
Right.
Especially after the procedure I had, you know, they cut off the piece of the disc that had pushed out.
Right.
But they leave that little hole where it came out from. And so that
makes there a possibility.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but
no, that's right. That's right.
Leaves the possibility.
And, you know, this gets into the area of, you know, shared decision making.
Yeah.
And your decision was that I don't want to have a fusion. Mm-mm. I want to have the least possible thing that I can have to get me better, even if that means I might have to revisit this.
Absolutely. And we had that very candid discussion before I had my surgery.
The microdiscectomy. Yeah. And that's a really important conversation to have.
Yeah.
Because we live in a world of shared decision making.
Absolutely.
Where your surgeon can say, well, there are different ways to go with this. Mm-hmm. What do you want to have? Yeah. Right. And that in many ways is the hardest thing.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting there saying, I don't know. I haven't gone to medical school yet.
You know better than me. You pick.
You're my doctor. You tell me what to do.
Yep.
And that's where getting informed, becoming knowledgeable so that you can advocate for yourself, just empowers you in those conversations.
So much.
That's what we are doing right now.
Yes.
Is we're sharing this knowledge so other people can learn.
Totally. And I, at that time, was combing through anything that I could possibly find online of somebody who had experienced something similar. I mean, I was going through TikTok. I was going through anything online. I actually was reading blog posts on the National Spine Health Foundation website. Had no idea what it was at that time, but I just know that reading the blog posts were so empowering in that way to know that everybody's story was different and everyone had their own treatment plan. But just to know that it's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And you're not alone.
And I'm not alone, which is huge.
Yeah. And it's going to be okay has different levels of okay.
Yeah.
And it's different for everybody.
I know.
And it all depends. Yep. Right.
And I'm still finding out, you know, I'm still on my journey of seeing what's okay going to look like for me. And there's a certain level of empowerment that comes with being comfortable and sitting in that unknown and that uncomfortability.
Yeah. That's amazing. So you had a second surgery with Dr. Good?
No, I did not.
You had
the epidural injections. Yes.
So that's right. So then they said, let's try epidural injections. Mm-hmm. And was it like PTSD?
It's like, immediately. No, it's like, no,
I'm not doing that.
No, thank you. And doc, I had a really honest conversation with Dr. Nguyen and said, I trust you. I have this knowledge now. I'm terrified.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I was almost in tears. I was like, I'm really scared. Like, please.
Yeah.
I can't go through that again.
Yeah.
The surgery was so successful that I was like, honestly, I'd rather have another microdiscectomy than another surgery.
Right.
Or another injection.
Right.
And he said, trust me. Like, I know what I'm doing. But the first thing he said was, I see you. I understand.
Yeah.
And that was so calming. It was
so
just,
calming.
I know that you are scared.
Yeah.
Trust me, I promise I will do everything I can to make sure that you are safe and that this makes you feel better and not worse.
Yeah.
I said, okay.
There's another element in there of going to a doctor, a practitioner. In this case, Dr. Nguyen is an interventional pain medicine doctor, right?
Yep.
And this is what he does all day long.
It is.
And did you have those questions? Did you ask him How often do you do this, Dr. Nguyen?
Yeah. And he really does do them all day long. And that's not an exaggeration. He probably, on the days he's in clinic, sometimes none, but sometimes, you know, five. And then on his injection days, which are twice a week, he can do up to 12.
Yeah.
He really, I mean, he's been doing this for years.
Right. And so was there comfort? Did you yes. know that? Did you talk with him about that?
Absolutely. And I asked that, but you can also sense that. And you can yeah. sense that in your discussions with the provider.
Well, you could now.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm like, I can tell if you know what you're doing or not.
Yeah, but that's an important message for our audience to mm-hmm. hear, that trust your instincts on something, yeah. right? And ask questions like, mm-hmm. how often do you do this?
Yeah.
You know, you inject, but do you inject in the spine? Yeah. Is that
do you do it under live mm-hmm. x-ray guidance was right. a question I didn't know that I should have been asking, mm-hmm. but definitely should have.
Interesting.
You know, all of these questions that I didn't know to ask that the second time around, I definitely did.
And that's what I say. Like, people don't even know what to ask. No. And so we're here to help mm-hmm. shed light on that.
Yes.
Ask the questions.
Yes.
Do you do this procedure? How yeah. often do you do this procedure? Mm-hmm. How do you do the procedure? Yeah.
Yeah. And then this time around, I also asked, okay, so are you aware of my anatomy and how are you going to adapt the treatment yeah. plan to work with my anatomy?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was what had happened the first time around, yeah, but maybe. I definitely wanted to make sure that it was not what happened
part
the
of
second
the story
time.
Now. Yeah. yeah. So how long ago was that series of injections? You had two, right?
2 months ago.
Yay! And look at you.
Yeah, I know. Yes. I'm so grateful.
I'm so excited for mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, I'm so grateful. So, I mean, the first injection gave me probably 60% relief, which I needed because yeah. it got to the point where I wasn't sleeping again. And that was when I said, okay, enough is enough.
Yeah,
The first night that I didn't sleep, it was took one sleepless night and I said, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful I did. And then he started me on a nerve medication, which I'm still taking now mm-hmm. and it helps. And I notice when I don't take it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stay on that for now. And I asked him, I said, how long do you think I'll need to take this? And he said, until you don't have any pain. And that was the other part about this, that mm-hmm. the second time around, I also had to deal with and I'm still dealing with is even the best doctors in the world are not fortune tellers. I mean, nobody yeah. can tell me what's going to happen or how long it's going to be yeah. or whatnot, but they can tell me right now with the information we have and your circumstance, what we can do to make your life better.
Yeah.
And they did.
That is awesome.
I did. And I had to just trust that. I had to say, yeah. okay.
And Kate, are you doing all of your full activities right
now? I am.
Now?
Yep. I had core power yoga this morning.
Do you have any hesitation when you go into your activities? Would you say that there's any?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I think it would be naive to, or not honest to say that I don't, and naive to not. I do currently have a herniated disc in my back. And I yeah. know that too, is that the yeah. second time around with the injections and the medication, it's to help with my symptoms.
Right.
But they didn't remove the herniation. So right. hesitation, yes, but I would also say it's more so mindfulness
mm-hmm.
in my movement. I definitely, you know, as a ballerina, it was always, you must do the hardest thing
right.
and the best. And
right.
this has definitely kind of rewritten that mindset of mine. So now I have no qualms about taking an adjustment or a different type of exercise
yeah.
in class. If,
yeah.
you know, it's a lot of twisting, I'll do something else. And I have no troubles doing that.
Right.
Which
that's amazing.
I definitely have. So in that case, yeah, I'd say hesitation.
And do they say the hardest thing you do well, right?
Like exactly.
If you get to a point where you can't execute it well,
exactly.
that movement well, then you don't, that's when you stop.
Exactly. And trusting my gut too. You know, sometimes I don't even try and do a movement. I'm just
yeah.
like, that doesn't feel, and some days it does feel like something I can do and yeah. some days it doesn't.
Right.
And that's just listening to my body.
That's listening to your body. And it's just knowing where the healthy boundaries are for
exactly.
you. And that's a gift that you've learned that about yourself, honestly.
It is. It's a huge blessing. And it's not something that I was born with. It's
yeah.
not something that I, you know, I continue to learn.
Right.
And I just have to be open to listen.
Right. So, Kate, I'm so grateful that you are sort of paying it forward here by coming on the podcast and sharing your story. We don't often hear about young people having, you know, these back problems, but we know it happens a lot
yeah.
out there. And I think it just gives so many people hope
mm-hmm.
and just knowledge on how to approach managing your journey. What have your doctors told you about your future? I know they're not fortune tellers, but right. What kinds of things have they said to you that you're just sort of kind of keeping in the back of your mind?
Yes. So I likely will need a fusion. Almost definitely will need a fusion. And the conversations I've had with my doctors were, you know, of course there's regenerative options, but because of the disc degeneration that I have now had that the second MRI showed and the recurrence of a herniation again within 2 years, there's definitely some instability there. And they said, you know, it's up to you if you want to do it now and get it over with, or if you want to wait and push it back, but you may re-herniate again, or this current herniation may make it worse. And I decided that I wanted to push it back and wait, because the injections and the medication are so helpful for now, but it's been 3 months.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in the trust the process and see where it goes. Yeah. I'm much less scared now.
That's so good.
And I know that they could do a one level fusion, and there are ways that I can do it that can maintain my mobility as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because I'm just 22, I'd really like to put off putting any sort of hardware into my body as long as possible.
Right.
But I've also recognized that this is my story, and I want to also take the best care of my body as possible and not be afraid of, you know, taking care of it. And so that's been the conversation with my doctors, is that this was not a one-time thing, and this is not over.
Yeah.
But if we can manage the pain for now until I'm in a position where I feel comfortable with that next step, then we're all happy.
I love it. Mm-hmm. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Getting to a happy place.
Yeah.
And we say this all the time here in the foundation that, you know, the journey to spinal health care is not a one and done thing.
No.
It is a lifelong journey.
It is.
Of self-care and self-awareness.
It is. And I didn't realize that truly the first time around. Mm. And, you know, there was a certain part of me that was like, okay, great.
Yeah.
I had surgery and I'm done.
Yeah.
And now I totally embrace that this is part of what makes me me. This is part of what's shaped who I want to be in the future, who I want to be to others, what I want to do for my career. So instead of thinking it's a one and done, I'm acknowledging and respecting the part that it is a journey, and it's my spinal journey.
I love it. And Kate, I totally relate to you because when I had a spondylolisthesis, an isthmic spondylolisthesis, and needed a fusion, and I was petrified of having that and that journey, It was such a life-changing thing for me that I became the CEO of the National Spinal Health Foundation. To tell the world, like, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
When you have something and there is a definitive treatment, do it.
Yeah.
And I wasted 10 years trying to delay this treatment, and it got worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And I was so mad that I waited all those years, and I could have been better sooner.
Yeah.
So that's what I do every day. I wake up every day and say, we got to tell the world about healthy spines, how to take care of them, and what to do when something happens.
And I want to be just like you when I grow up. That is exactly what I want to do. I'm so grateful you said, you know, thank you for coming on this podcast. But really, it feels like a gift to me, because I would have done anything to have had this resource. And what I did have was such a game changer for me. And to be able to use my story for any sort of good would make it all worth it. I really mean that too.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm so grateful that I get to be here. So thank you.
Thank you. That's amazing. Awesome. So, gosh, I've totally gone off this. I don't even know what we're talking about here. Interning. Oh, should we talk about mental health at all? I mean, I feel like we're kind of winding down the conversation, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, the mental health aspects of being a young person, being debilitated by pain and feeling somewhat isolated and depressed.
Very.
And scared.
Very. I think that that is probably the part of the spinal journey that there is the least conversation, articles, you name it, about is the mental health aspect. And it really is very hard. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
The anxiety, the depression that comes when your body doesn't do what you want it to do or what you think that it should.
Yeah.
That being said, it really does give you a newfound gratitude for all of the things that your body and mind can do. And so while I'm not going to dance on point again, I get so much more joy out of my core power yoga classes than I ever would have.
Well, you were going to quit point.
Exactly. I was not going to be a professional ballerina anyway. So, right. And you know, you don't.
But you want it to be on your terms. You do. I mean, I think that's the thing.
Right? You do. And you, it helps you to not take the small things for granted. It helps you to recognize what you do have if you take that glass half full mindset. Mm-hmm. But then it also, it helps to think of it as my wins and my story. And especially as a young person, it's really easy to say, well, I don't see any of my friends having to go through this. Right. It's not fair.
Right.
And I really struggled with that.
Yeah.
But then I also have to think about, well, gosh, it actually also gives me an edge. Mm-hmm. It's made me more empathetic. It's made me more grateful. It's made me want to be a patient care provider. And I hope that that will be part of my superpower as a provider to say to patients, I understand. Yeah. I hear you. I have been a patient once too. Mm-hmm. I think that trying to really actively, and it's not easy, but actively intentionally choosing to change my mindset and my view and think of it as part of what makes me special instead of that's not fair helps a lot.
To kind of get out of the victim mindset,
right?
Totally. Did you have any help with mental health? Sort of realignment to use a pun.
Yeah, like aligning. Yeah. Not after my surgery. You know, I had definitely been in counseling growing up and in high school, not in college at all, but that definitely armed me with the tools to then be able to, through this injury, talk about it.
Right.
And I had to reframe it.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a tool that I had learned earlier on.
That's amazing.
Became very useful in this circumstance. But I had friends and family who were really there for me. And the support system. Totally.
So amazing.
Totally. And the second time around was definitely scary as well, being, oh no, this has happened again. And just having people that were there was invaluable.
Invaluable. And so interesting that you understand this unique perspective on the mental health aspects. Mm-hmm. And you did an internship in college.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
So I have always actually been very passionate about mental health. And when I was a public health major in undergrad, and I wanted to get my master's in public health, I wanted to work in healthcare policy, specifically mental health policy. And when I herniated my disc the first time and had surgery, I had just started an internship at the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board working on mental health initiatives on college campuses.
Wow.
And I'd been there for maybe 2 weeks when I injured myself.
Oh my gosh.
And the reason I wanted to get back so fast was I wanted to get back to my job. And in December, actually, after I graduated, when I decided to graduate a semester early, I got to speak on a panel with the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, with the whole state leaders in higher education across the country, talking about AI and mental health on college campuses and public health impacts. And so in that case, I didn't want to leave that aspect of my passion behind. And so now to get to tie it into spine, which is so personal to me, and patient care, which is what I really truly am so excited to get to do, it all feels very,
it's all come together. That is absolutely amazing. I'm so excited for you. And I really see you on panels in the future out there talking because you're articulate. You share your vulnerabilities and you've just been so gracious and, generous with your time and your story. And I am so grateful to you.
Thank you. I feel so blessed that the things that I've gone through, I've been able to take from what I have, and that I've had the people around me to support me. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to do anything to be able to help somebody else.
That's awesome. Kate, it was such a pleasure and an honor to spend time with you today and to have you on the podcast. Sharing your story with the community, especially the athlete community, will spread awareness that spine injuries can happen to anyone. your journey through injury and recovery is a testament to the power of expert care, determination, and a positive mindset. You've shown us that even in the face of setbacks, it's possible to come back stronger, not just physically, but with a renewed sense of purpose. Thank you for sharing your journey and for reminding us all that our spine journeys can be empowering. At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain every year. To hear more stories of spinal champion recovery and to access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.